Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 15. It's me, Rafe Blanford, and with me are...
Steve Litchfield.
And Stefan Constantinescu.
Thanks, guys. First this week, we're just going to touch on two bits of UIQ news before moving into editorial mode, where we're just going to waffle around a couple of topics. So the two pieces of news we wanted to touch on both relate to UIQ. The first of these is that Google has released a native version of the Google Maps for UIQ. This is obviously a lot faster and quicker to load than the Java version, which does run on UIQ phones and generally offers a superior experience. Google, of course, already have this running on S60, but it's good to see it get onto UIQ. The other piece of news is that the Motorola Z8 firmware updates have finally come out. This is more than a year after the phone was first announced and about 9 months after it first came onto the market. It's been a bit of a long wait, and it does fix a few of the bug fixes in the Z8, but I still would have liked to see this happen a bit earlier. But perhaps it's a good sign that Motorola are continuing to upgrade the software. So the first topic that we're going to talk about this week is location tagging, also known as geotagging. And I'm going to ask Steve to talk us through what exactly this involves.
Okay, well, as you've seen from some of the more recently announced devices, they have this so-called location tagging. It's also available as a standalone plugin from the Nokia Beta Labs, where you can add location tagging to any S60th edition smartphone with a camera, and you can use a Bluetooth GPS if you haven't got one built in. And the engine ties into the camera itself, giving you a little icon to show you the GPS status. And the clever thing is, apart from the obvious stuff, that it actually logs in the EXIF data for your photo exactly where it was taken. The clever thing is, for me, is the intelligence they've put behind the implementation. It doesn't just force you to sit there waiting while your photo gets processed and your GPS fix gets established for 30 seconds or 2 minutes. It takes the photo, lets you move on with your life. And if there's a GPS fix available, it takes it. Otherwise, it sits around the background for a few seconds trying to get it. If you're not anywhere near a GPS fix, i.e. if you're indoors, it then sits around and waits for up to a set number of minutes, assuming that you're not going to move from that location too quickly, and then it adds in the GPS location when it gets a fix, say 10 minutes later when you get back into your car. So for me, the implementation is pretty swish. I've been trying it out on the N95 8GB and the N82 here, and it seems to work really, really well.
Okay, thanks, Steve. And Stefan, what's the point in geotagging? I mean, I don't really, I do get it, but for the benefit of all our listeners, perhaps you could explain why they would want to geotag an image in the first place.
Well, it would actually help you if you're walking around town and you take an image of something that caught your attention, and then you could place that item on a map. The services around that, based around showing your friends anything you've seen or advertising, it's rather interesting, but right now I really can't see how location is interesting to me as an end user, because if I come home from an event or a party, I can just tag my photos where I was, and for me it isn't really important to know exactly what street I was in, more just the general vicinity in terms of which country I'm in or which city I'm in. So,
and do you think that's partly because there aren't really the tools to exploit it at the moment? I mean, I know on the phone in the most recent version of location tagging, as the add-on, and indeed in the new phones coming, they've added the ability to show on the map on the phone itself. But I mean, while that's interesting, it's not something I can really see getting driving people to use geotagging. I mean, of course, the thing is about this geotagging, it is completely seamless in that you can leave it and just get on with it, and it's another bit of metadata. But my personal feeling on this is that you can't really exploit it until you get it back to a PC or upload it to a service like Flickr, and then, you know, you can view all the photos on a map. And to my mind, sort of viewing photos on a map is a much more natural way to doing it than just seeing them all in a big folder or arranged into albums. And I'm not very good about arranging my photos into albums, so anything that does some kind of categorization automatically is good in my book. Do you think you'd get into it more if there were more services or more ways of actually using the location data in the photos?
Well, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head where it's just another piece of metadata attached to the photo, and it's currently not being exploited at all. And it really depends on the tool makers out there to make something interesting, to make it actually useful. But in its current state and implementation, it's completely rubbish.
Okay, thanks, Steph. Steve, how about you? I mean, do you see any other point to location tagging?
Yeah, I can see a future here. Now, obviously, the tools, as you say, aren't quite there yet. But Nokia have been, as you probably saw on the site, been talking to me by their maps team about the plans for a PC tool and a web tool, integrating the maps information about where you've been, routes you're planning. And they've also got this, as you know, this big share system where you can upload your photos. And the whole Ovi concept, I can see this coming together so that, for example, I get home from a holiday with the family, and I can bring up on the screen of my laptop a big map of where we've been, the whole area, and up there will pop all the different photos, exactly where they were taken, when they were taken, and you can just drill down into the map graphically, bring up each photo, and really get a sense for where you've been, where each cove, which where each beach was, where each cliff was, where each flower, whatever. And you could I can see geotagging being really quite useful in that family context.
Okay, thanks, Steve. But thinking about future uses, is there anything we can think of for location tagging there? How about you, Stefan?
Well, in the same sense that we browse the internet right now for particular websites, it would be interesting if you could apply that same concept for locations. I know that when I was in Spain for 3GSM, and if I was standing in a particular street corner, it would be interesting if I could pull up all the public information about that particular street corner that was added by individuals, sort of like a Wikipedia, but about points on the map.
Yes, no, I definitely agree with that one. I mean, I always think of it as the utility of post-it notes positioned in location places virtually, so you can see what other people think about things, and be it restaurants, and obviously imaging would be a strong part of that. However, with location services, there's always a concern about the privacy issue, and I know this is something that Steve's been thinking a little bit about. Steve, why do you feel this is a particular problem with location tagging of photos?
Okay, well, while I have no objection whatsoever to anyone in the world knowing where I've been on holiday by looking at my Ovi share photos and seeing that Steve went to this place and this today, you went to London, you went to here, there and everywhere, that's no problem. I do have a strong objection to people seeing the EXIF geotagged data for photos I've snapped in my back garden or at the local playground or at the local school, at local events, because it's in these days of ID theft, stalkers, you never know what creeps are out there trying to steal my life or interfere with my life, and I really don't want some casual bit of information that's been stuffed into metadata on Nokia photos coming back to haunt me by some complete lunatic appearing at my front door. I'd want to make sure that location tagging was obviously turned off by default, but easy to turn on and off on each device with each firmware.
I think you're absolutely right, and incidentally, I think that's why Nokia are actually turning location tagging off by default on the new phone, so you'll have to explicitly enable it. And I actually think this is a more general issue. Location tagging does bring it into focus, but with these sort of online photo sharing services, there's always been issues around privacy, which is why the social aspects of it in terms of adding contacts as friends and only allowing them to see your photos or certain sets of photos, I think is so important. But I think a certain amount of intelligence, automated intelligence, is going to be needed on some of these services that sort of looks for location information and doesn't display it or removes it for groups that you don't want to show it to. And I think there's a lot more development potential there. And I know this is something that Stefan thought about in the future in terms of creating different levels of access to your personal information that you upload online. As more of us share more information online, I don't think there's always enough thought about who can access that and how you might want to sort of control that by some sort of gateway or some sort of gatekeeping. I mean, Stefan, do you think this is an issue that we're going to see come out a lot more in the next few years?
Oh, absolutely. We're seeing the online trends right now pointing towards a more user-controlled model of controlling your information. People are tired of signing up for services and finding all their friends, and that's pushing the trend for more control aimed at the user. So when they control who sees their images, what sort of information about the images is exposed, it's starting to happen right now, but it will increase more and more as we head towards the future.
Yes, and I feel there's a certain issue about user friendliness and making it obvious to people how they can control that, which isn't there yet. It's fine for sort of the techie people, but I can imagine it being more of a problem for some of my family, for example. Steve, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, just one more point. We were talking there about how much Ovi share, stroke photos, whatever you want to call it, how it displays your images and which information it makes accessible. But usually most of these services, you can actually download the original JPEG. And that, of course, will have the original information in. So it's just to make that point absolutely clear. The information, the geotag data, is in the raw file. And if the raw file is still accessible online, then that privacy concern is still there. So the control over the geotagged and geotagging and privacy has to happen actually on your smartphone itself, in whether you put that information in the file.
Yes, absolutely. No, that's a good technical point, although I wonder whether it might be possible to have a server automatically scrub location data out if it's being downloaded by someone who isn't in your friends list. The other thing that just I briefly want to touch on before moving on is what I find really interesting about this location tagging stuff is that it's using the GPS for the second major usage that is being promoted very heavily and obviously by Nokia. You know, navigation we've seen already, and I think location tagging is just at the vanguard of so many more services that we're going to see that use the GPS. So although it's easy to talk, and I think many of the issues we've talked about in terms of privacy and ease of use are going to apply just as much to some of these other uses of location data. But this is why I'm so pleased to see GPSs in all of these phones, because they're going to drive more and more location software and services. And I think this is almost an unlimited potential in a new area that we'll see developing very strongly over the next few years. Would you agree with that, Steve?
Yes, absolutely. And just one more very brief thing on before you move on. Well, when Nokia bought Navtech, was it 8 billion? Did I get that number right? But it's an awful, awful lot of money. And we all thought, what on earth are they doing spending that much money on simply buying in a navigation data firm? And I think we're starting to see that now. I predicted last year that in 2008, almost every smartphone would have GPS. It would be a bottom line, baseline function. And I think we're just starting to get a glimpse now of the number of things that can be tied together through knowing where you are.
Absolutely. And the mapping data that they bought with Navtech is obviously so crucial to that. It's like the very base component, the DNA of many of these services, if you like. And so it's starting to look like a very smart acquisition by Nokia. So I think we'll move on to our second topic in the Insight this week, which is around the design of mobile phones. And this has come up particularly because of the recent N-series announcements, the N96, the N91, and the N82, and also the N78 have all, I think, would probably say had a certain amount of fashion consciousness in their design, and they're using black plastics and shiny surfaces. And I know that the members of this Insight group don't actually necessarily agree on whether this is a good or a bad thing. So I know Steve has got a bit of a rant about this. So what's the problem with this, Steve?
Well, for starters, I don't particularly like ultra shiny surfaces. They are fingerprint magnets, but not just because of that, but quite often that's allied to things like screens which perform poorly outdoors in bright light, and my pet hate of the recent months, which is keypads, numbers and letters, which illuminate gloriously from behind indoors and which you can't read at all outdoors. So you have a keypad. If you're not like me, I use a T9 when I'm on a numeric keypad of phone, but I still have to look occasionally to see which letter is on which number. I know that's a shocking admission, but I still have to look. And if the blessed things are invisible, I can't use the device. So things like, I think I saw in your N78 preview, the number keys, they dim out when you're in your camera mode, implying that the legends themselves are light-up legends, which means they're not going to do very well outdoors. Then the second thing about design was things like the N82 keypad, and I'm seeing that same design on more and more designs now from Nokia and other manufacturers, with these pencil-thin keys and then the legends above them, and they're really, really uncomfortable. And I'm sure Stefan's going to come back to me on this, but that's just my take on some two or three of the recent designs.
Okay, Stefan, and would you agree with that?
Yeah, in terms of, I see hardware manufacturers trying to create phones that stand out extremely, I would say, in an almost gaudy way. It used to be that smartphones were more masculine, more simple. And when you saw them in stores, they weren't the most attractive pieces of kit, mainly because they were more useful than anything else. But now they're trying to attract teenagers and everyone else, so they're trying to... It's really hard to put into words. You have to walk into a phone shop and just try to read the specifications of hardware without trying to be repulsed by all the hardware. I know phones like the 6220 Classic, it comes in purple and pink and blue, and we're just seeing that sort of opening up of the market where customization is starting to become a key factor, and standing out with your hardware will be just pushed more and more.
I do agree with you. The very horror of the idea of normal people using smartphones is enough to give me nightmares. But I think you're right, it's appealing to the bigger market, and I don't actually necessarily think this is a bad thing, because I mean, I've been using the N82 keypad, and you know, I actually find it perfectly usable. I don't think the keys are too bad. The fact that the numbers and the letters aren't on the keys doesn't really bother me. And I sort of put it next to something like the N95, the classic version, and it does look more attractive, and it does look nicer, it feels better in the hand. And, you know, smartphones have been dominated for so long by this sort of grey or silver beige plastics with rounded corners, and it's definitely been function over form. And now I think we're seeing a bit more of a natural balance between form and function, although I would agree that some take it too far the other way, and the best example I can think of this is the N76, which really was a fingerprint magnet and had the awful positioning of the audio jack. I look at something like, say, the N78, which clearly is one of the more style-conscious phones of recent times, and Steve particularly picked up on the keypad, and... actually, in using it, it's very easy to use. It's got great tactile feedback. It's not nearly as bad as it looks, but I would take the point about the light-up keyboard, and until we actually get a production sample and get it outside and see what it's like, it's going to be difficult to tell. But to my mind, you know, you do have to drive these smartphones somehow into the mass market, and if you're just making them look really ugly, it's just not going to work, especially when they're competing against phones like, say, the 5300 Slide, which I think is a very attractive Series 40 phone. So I do think there's a place for this sort of style-led design. Are you not willing to budge at all, Steve?
No, I'm not. I'm going to stick to my guns in this one. I've got an N95 8GB in my hand, and it's gorgeous. I think Ewan McLeod from SMS Text News is quite a well-read blogger. He got his N95 8GB this week, and he was saying how incredibly sexy it was. I know you, Rafe, have been using the same device now for a few months, and I think you presumably love yours as well. Just looking at the N95 8GB, black and shiny, gorgeously large screen, the keypad's real physical keys with real physical painted-on, white-on-black legends you can read in all light conditions. The screen you can read in all light conditions. It's got rounded corners. It's a bit on the chunky side for a phone, but it can do everything in the known universe.
On the chunky side. It's eaten all the pies.
but my point is, I can't see why Nokia have abandoned the sort of N95 style with physical legends on keys and sort of a black and chrome styling, which I think actually looks more attractive than things like the N81 and N78. And they've obviously got a new design team in hand. Nokia do tend to go through these cycles, different design teams, different ideas, new brooms, sweeps, clean and all that. I'm just hoping at the back of my mind that they have a new design team in the next year or two and we get a return to a different form factor and a different styling.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there with the I think bit. It's such a subjective topic, and we all have different opinions and different preferences. And I'd actually agree with you. The N95 is an extremely nice designer, particularly like the keypad. I actually prefer the control cluster on the N96 that they've slightly redesigned. But I think there's always going to be incremental improvements, and you'll never quite get exactly what you want. I mean, in terms of the phones that really stand out in your mind, Stefan, as being something you like, is there any you'd particularly pick out?
Oh boy, this goes way back, but the phone from the original Matrix stands out. Any of the classic 3000 series stand out. Essentially, I want to go back, way back to the early 2000s, when phones were much more simple and they stood out in terms of their software stack, where right now it's just, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the shiny plastic. Even the N95 8GB, it's too shiny for me. The perfect phone, I think, currently on the market is the E61i. But again, that's my subjective opinion. And when some people hold that phone up to their heads, you can't even see their faces anymore. So it's not for everyone.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. Steve, go back to you quickly.
Yeah, I take Stefan's point. The E61i is a fabulously perfect form factor for an awful lot of people, both normal people who want to do lots of texting and geeks like us who do lots of emailing and texting and other stuff as well, like word processing. But I think the reason the E71, which is, I think we're allowed to number it now because it's been rumored all over the shop, the reason people are getting so excited about Nokia perhaps about to announce this is it brings the E61i design, which is a classic design, right up to date with all the latest codecs, latest camera, etc., etc. So I agree, the E61i, it sits proudly in my drawer, and I don't use it day to day, and I'm sure it's sobbing tears in the drawer, but it's a classic design, and I'd go stand with Stefan on that one.
Yeah, no, so Steve from making Symbian phones cry by leaving them in his desktop drawer, and I think we'll leave it there, but would be very interested to hear other people's opinions on what designs they like and whether they think Nokia is going in the right direction or indeed what they'd like to see. I mean, for example, you know, are people interested in seeing more green in their phones? Nokia have been announcing various green concepts recently. Perhaps that's something we'll talk about in a future Insight. So the last thing we want to do on the Insight is plug a few events that are coming up. And I know Steve's got one of these. So do you want to tell us about your event, Steve?
Yes, indeed. There are two events coming up. Mine is on the March the 5th, coincidentally the same date and time as the other event. Mine is in Reading at the 3B's bar in the museum complex in the centre of Reading in Berkshire in the United Kingdom. And it's simply a chance to come along and play with the N95 8GB, the E90 and the N82 in a sort of low light conditions and to try out the N82 Xenon flash and have fun playing with technology. But people do need to email me if they're coming along, please.
I should add to this that Steve and his band will be playing, so there's another reason to go along as well. and you can check out some of his clips on YouTube, and we'll put the links in the show notes for that event and more information. The other event we want to mention quickly is that One World are holding an N-Series meetup in London for bloggers or anybody who's interested in coming along to play with the latest phones and just chat away with fellow enthusiasts. That's going to be held in Holborn in London, also next Wednesday, starting from about 6:30. And again, I'll put the details in the show notes so you can check that out. I'll be going along to the Holborn event, so if you come along, do come and say hello to me. I'll probably be hiding in a corner trying not to be noticed. And lastly, you may have noticed the absence of a certain Scottish individual in this Insight. Ewan is currently on his way to America, and we're now going to try and link up with him. He's currently somewhere at Heathrow Airport, we hope, and we're going to ask him a little bit about how he uses software and services. So please bear with us while we try and make this connection. Aside from that, we'll say goodbye from the other two guys. Thanks for coming along today, guys. Really appreciate it.
Cheers.
Ciao.
And let's go with Ewan.
Broadsword calling Danny Boy, Broadsword calling Danny Boy, Broadsword. Hello, Al. Hello, Rafe. Yes, you in here from the lounge at Heathrow, having watched Where Eagles Dare on my N95 on the flight down. Yes, travelling around, lots of blogging. So I really wanted to talk very briefly about some of the software that I'm using that helps get media from my phone up onto the internet as I'm going around. Obviously, all of these need an unlimited data SIM, so there's a heads up once I get to America to AT&T for setting me up with that. But I really want to talk about two applications here. The first one is Quick. QIK.com. So this is a web service that has an S60 client, and basically I can switch on the video camera on the N95 and it will stream out that video onto the quick.com website and send a Twitter and SMS alert out to all my friends saying,
I am now broadcasting. So admittedly, you've got to keep the resolution, though, down to about 175 by 120 to get a good amount of throughput. But what's also proves interesting is when people go onto the website to watch the live video, they also have a chat box as well. So they can send messages up to me on my screen when I'm traveling. So conceivably, what I could do now is start quick while I'm here in the airport lounge, pan it around everybody, and people could watch me in the lounge watching other people and ask me questions. So if I'm doing an interview, for example, if I was interviewing somebody from Sony Ericsson, we could start quick running off. People could watch the interview live, and they could also feedback in questions that I could ask as it's happening.
So you can also use it as a group stalking tool as well.
Well, I'd like to think more of it is it's almost like having a very small TV station in your pocket.
I know this has also been used on places like, I think the BBC's been using it to do some live stuff as well. And Robert Scoble has been a big proponent of it. Do you honestly think that people are interested in watching really low quality stuff when it's live? Wouldn't they rather have something that, even if it's delayed by 15 minutes, just has a bit more editing to it and has a bit more thought into it? What do you think is the sort of demand for that sort of thing?
So yeah, I do see that this is one of those areas where it's not the finished product. The resolution is quite low. The quality is reasonably good. You can see what's going on. It's rather like how, TV used to be 425 lines black and white mono. Now, of course, we have HDTV, massive resolution, 5.1 stereo coming down the pipe. But it's very much a signpost of where I think blogging, personal media is going. It's very much like having a small TV studio in your pocket, and it will get better over time. And it's people like us here all about streaming that do sit out here on this bleeding edge and play around with stuff like that, and people like Robert Scoble that you've mentioned there do like that sort of thing. But there is a place for the slightly better quality video with a little bit of editing, and that's why I'm a very strong user of Shozu. Shozu have actually opened up my account while I'm traveling, which means I can do full uploads of the videos. I can about 10 minutes of videos, about 20 megabytes, which can be squirted up from the phone. And of course, with it being the original N95, that the video editing suite, basically it is still built into the phone. So I can take the video, maybe of me, of something that I'm watching, put in a title card or two and some titles, edit on the phone, and then upload to Shozu. Shozu will then post it direct either to my website or into an FTP space. But at the moment, I've also got it pointing to one of these alpha video chat services. In this case, it's Seismic. And of course, it also has facilities for Flickr pictures, geotagging, and putting up regular text as well. So most of the pictures that I take will be going direct to Flickr from the handset, meaning I can leave the laptop safely off in the backpack as well.
I agree with you, Ewan. In terms of pushing these new media boundaries, it's fascinating to see what's going on. And clearly you're, the cutting edge here, being a media 2.0 maven, if you like. It'll be interesting to talk to you actually once you've gone through this trip and find out what the real world experience was like. But as a sort of final item before you disappear off to get on your plane, what other uses outside of media do you actually use when you're away on these trips? I mean, because I know you do take a laptop, but how much do you use your phone for the sort of everyday stuff?
One of the things that I use the phone for quite heavily while I'm away is mobile book reading and ebooks. And recently, one of the largest science fiction publishers based in Canada, Torbooks, TOR.com, they're piloting a new big website. But what they're doing to promote that is they're giving away one of their high-quality and award-winning science fiction novels every week at tor.com if you sign up to get a letter for the project. So I'm currently reading, let's see, let me just page down to where we are in the phone. We're reading a book called Old Man's War by an award-winning science fiction writer, John Scalzi. And it's on the handset. It's using a Mobi Pockets reader. And you look at the size of books that you get. I mean, the Harry Potter book is a great example. It weighs over a kilogram. There's 800 or so pages. It's only available hardback for the later ones. To carry all seven of them in a bag is just crazy, especially when you're traveling. Not that Harry Potter is available legally as an ebook, but books of similar size are available from Tor, are available from Project Gutenberg for slightly older texts, and of course are available from Mobi Pocket themselves to purchase. And it doesn't add anything else to your weight. It adds maybe 300 or 400k file onto a 4 gigabyte memory card. So it takes lots of reading material in a very small space, very convenient to read, and of course when you're traveling, Cattle class in these planes, you don't need to spread out. You can stay nicely in your cocoon and not worry about elbows being pushed over, tables coming back at you. It just makes reading very comfortable.
And how do you find the sort of eye strain? Because it's a relatively small screen and reading for quite a long time. I know we sometimes have problems on computer monitors. Is that something that gets you when you're listening to an reading an e-book?
I've been reading ebooks since the 160 by 160 resolution Palm Pilot 1000. So to me, it feels natural because I've been doing it for so long. So I don't know. No, it's fine with me. But there are dedicated book readers coming out. Sony have one coming out. And of course, America has the Amazon book reader.
The Kindle and the Sony reader.
Yep.
And outside of these sort of things, presumably you're still using your phone for the contact management, the calendar about what you're doing next, and a bit of media playback as well. Do you use video at all on the N95?
I use media playback, as I said, Where Eagles Dare. Lots of stuff in MP4 and H.264. You can get a decent film down to about 250 megabytes with those. In terms of contacts and calendar managing, I travel with S60, and it's just not powerful enough, so I have to use... heavens forfend, but a paper Filofax.
So Ewan uses a paper Filofax instead of his S60 phone. So yep. Clearly we need to improve the PIM client on S60. Okay, thanks very much for reporting in, Ewan. I think we may well try and get you to do some remote reporting for us on the Insight. We'll be having, in effect, from our own correspondent, Ewan Style, from various events in America, and he'll be telling us about some of the cool things we're seeing. But until then, Ewan, have a safe flight.
Thank you very much.